May it please the court. My name is Zachary Schmoke. I represent the appellant in this case, Stephanie Cameron, who was the tenant in the underlying rent and possession action. The right of a jury is a fundamental pillar of our nation, and its deprivation was one of the fundamental reasons that our founders elected to separate from England. That right is also enshrined in the Missouri Constitution as an inviolate right. The key issue in this case is whether the 2014 amendments to Chapter 535 that removed the right of trial de novo also removed the right to have these cases heard by a jury at any point in the judicial process. They did not. Indeed, they could not have done that because that right is protected in legal claims as opposed to equitable or administrative claims as an inviolate right under the Constitution. Because that right is inviolate, it is immune to hostile legislation, and this court must interpret Chapter 535 in accordance with the Constitution of the state so that it can be protect that inviolate right to trial by jury. The most recent case that this court has heard on this right was Rice v. Lucas in 1979. In that case, at that time, Chapter 535 cases were heard first by a magistrate court judge, and the first appeal was to the circuit court for a trial de novo. The court in that case found that there was no right to trial by jury at the magistrate court level, but that ruling was based on the type of court that was hearing the case and not the type of claim. The court stresses in that case that de novo trial was available when that case reached trial de novo before the circuit court. It said that the statute in question does not provide for a jury trial, yet it does provide, without unreasonable restriction, for appeal to a court where a jury trial may be had. When such is the case, the Constitution is not only not violated, but the mode and manner of securing that constitutional right is pointed out. Furthermore, that case specifically distinguishes the tenant in Rice v. Lucas from the tenant in Purnell v. Southall Realty, which was a case heard by the Supreme Court of the United States regarding the right to jury trial in these similar types of cases within the District of Columbia. In Purnell, the tenant was given one crack at the apple. He had his case at trial, and if he wanted to appeal, he could appeal to the Court of Appeals. The court in Rice found it an important distinction that there was a second crack at the apple at the time that Rice was decided. You had the magistrate court, but then there was that right to jury preserved at the circuit court level. That entire analysis of the appeal or the de novo right would have been unnecessary had the court simply decided that Chapter 535 actions were inherently not entitled to a jury trial.
So opposing counsel says that discussion was dicta, but you think it was necessary to distinguish the case from Purnell, is what you're saying?
I do think it was necessary for that decision. And, Your Honor, when these cases actually do reach the circuit court, as the case in Burleson v. Conklin did, a Southern District of Appeals case, at the time of that decision, appeals were, the first trial was before an associate circuit court justice. It was a judge. It was after the magistrate courts had been eliminated by statute, but there still was a right to trial de novo at the circuit court. Because of the procedure of that case, there were counterclaims raised that took the case out of the jurisdiction of the associate circuit court judge, and so it was heard, certified by the presiding judge, and heard before the circuit court. So in that case, Burleson v. Conklin, the first time that the case was heard was on the record with an appeal to the Court of Appeals, and the court in that case determined that there was a right to trial by jury at that point because under the meaning of Rice, that case had reached the circuit court. Rice reaffirmed the holding in Kansas City Auditorium, and that holding was that jury trials are available in these cases whenever and by whatever means they reach the circuit court. Now, since the 2014 amendments, all cases brought under Chapter 535 reach the circuit court the first time that they're heard. Accordingly, they are heard on the record, and their first appeal is to the Court of Appeals. That means that they're entitled to a jury trial because they're civil claims for damages that are heard on the record for the first time.
Can you address that latter issue you just mentioned further? Opposing counsel spends a lot of time arguing that it's not, that it's an equitable action, and I know you talk about various other actions that it's analogous to on both sides. Can you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. So These holdings in Rice and Burleson are entirely consistent with the holding in Deal, which is the idea that these cases are whether there's a jury trial right is based on whether they are analogous to the types of claims that were heard at common law before trial by jury, that were afforded that right at common law. Now, a rent and possession claim is, as the name implies, two claims. It's a claim for rent money owed and physical possession of the property. That rent claim is a quintessentially legal claim. It is a claim for money damages based on a breach of a lease contract. The ejectment claim, the possession claim, which is analogous to ejectment, is also a common law claim. Now, Deal specifically dealt with monetary claims for damages, but throughout the history of Missouri courts, this court has recognized that claims for ejectment, claims for possession of real property, are common law legal claims, and that injunction cannot be a possessory remedy. So under either of those analyses, rent and possession both are common law legal claims.
And their argument is that the possession is simply a collateral minor matter the rent is a minor matter, that the key part is the possession, and that sounds in equity, and that the rent is just a collateral matter and doesn't prevent it from an inequity. You obviously feel the opposite. Can you address those issues for us?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that analysis of the statute misreads the statute. In these cases, rent is a condition precedent to possession. The statute says that if it shall appear that rent which is due has been demanded and that payment has not been made, then the judge shall render judgment that the landlord recover possession. If there's no rent owed, and that's under 535.040.1, if there is no rent owed, there is no claim for rent and possession. So accordingly, even if this court finds that the possession claim is an equitable claim, this case should be heard under Leonardi as a mixed legal and equitable claim. And under Leonardi, the court held that the trial court has discretion to try such cases in the most practical and efficient manner possible, but consistent with Missouri's historical preference for a litigant's right to jury trial in claims at law. Because that rent is a condition precedent to any award of possession, the jury has to have the ability, should the parties elect, one of the parties elect, the jury has the ability to hear that legal claim. And then if this court finds that the possession claim is equitable, then the judge's role would be to determine the possession in accordance with the jury's findings on rent that's owed.
So are you conceding that possession is an equitable claim?
No, Your Honor.
Can you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. The history of Missouri claims has consistently found that possession of real property is not equitable. That ejectment, which is the common law analog of these possession claims, the unique common law claim that allows a party to gain possession of real property, is entitled to jury trial. There's a long history through that. So under either definition, though, whether possession is equitable or not, there is a jury trial right for the rent case, which is a sounds in contract as a award of damages in the form of money. Now, this court
would a trial court have discretion to hear the possession issue without a jury and then set the jury trial later on the damages issue?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And the reason why is that the only way that possession can accrue to the landlord in these cases is if there's a finding that rent is owed.
What if the tenant admitted that rent was owed but disputed the amount?
In that case, Your Honor, it's still a monetary claim for damages. There's a dispute about the damages that are owed. And because Chapter 535 has the right to cure, that number has to be determined before possession can be awarded. So if the landlord says, I owe $10,000, I think I owe $1,000, we go to court, the jury decides that $1,000 is the right amount, I have the ability under 535 to pay $1,000 and remain in possession.
Didn't Leonardi address that and say that if there's issues that are relevant to both, but you have a right to jury trial on some, you should have that first, and then the court can take those findings and use them in determining the equitable portion?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree with that. The especially in this case, because rent is the condition precedent to possession, that issue has to be resolved before, even if this court finds that possession is equitable, before the court awards possession.
Would you address your opponent's argument that 535 proceedings now, in light of the 2014 amendment from the legislature, that the legislature intended these proceedings to be summary proceedings with like an expeditious resolution? And could you address that argument?
The first thing I would say, Your Honor, is that as a constitutional right to jury is inviolate, the legislative intent is to some degree irrelevant. The legislature cannot exceed its authority under the Constitution to take away constitutional rights, even if it intended to. I don't think we have to go that far, though, because there's another summary proceeding in the Missouri statutes, that's Chapter 534, the unlawful detainer actions. Those cases are also summary, but within the statute, there is a right to jury trial. And in practice, that right is very rarely used. So our brief in this case, our substitute brief in this case, analyzed cases that were identified as unlawful detainer cases in St. Louis County, St. Louis City, and Jackson County, found 2,317 cases, a single case that was determined by a jury. And that case was 57 days from filing to the jury determination. So I don't think that there's anything inherently at odds with that idea of a speedy trial based on the right to jury. And I think that the existence of jury trial and the other summary proceeding allows these cases also to have a jury trial.
For the record, what case was that?
That case, Your Honor, was listed in the brief. It was, one moment, Your Honor, I can give you the exact name of it.
If it's in your brief, you can tell us on the rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Finally, in the few minutes I have remaining, I want to address the idea of burden. The burden in this case would likely be very low, the burden is the judicial economy. And that's because in Missouri, just 1.0% of cases are heard by jury trial. There are means available to address these cases without going to jury, including motions for summary judgment, if there really are no issues at dispute, settlement, negotiation, all the ways that these cases are resolved in practice, as unlawful detainer cases are resolved with the existence of the jury trial.
So, Your Honor. Counselor, your initial time has expired. We'll hear from you on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court.
You may proceed.
Your Honors, I want to start by thanking you all for allowing us the opportunity to be here today. I know it's somewhat unusual for Amicus Curiae to be able to argue in front of the court, but we want to start by thanking you on behalf of the Missouri Apartment Association, because we do think that this truly is an important issue. And it's an issue that affects thousands and thousands of landlords across this state, and it affects their ability and impedes their ability to be able to protect their interest as to real property. And it does that for what we believe are two main reasons. First, we believe that the advent or the allowance of jury trials and rent possession cases under Chapter 535 would create a public policy nightmare for not only our landlords, but also for our associate circuit courts throughout the state of Missouri that would clog their dockets and create an untenable framework for hearing these types of cases.
Is that what happened when we had trial de novo?
No, but there was a mechanism in place back when we had trial de novo that required the posting of a bond, which effectively would filter out some of those claims that would have otherwise been requested for jury trial. So I think the bond issue back when we had trial de novo was something that would have addressed that issue. We don't have trial de novo now. The legislature has made a specific choice that we don't have trial de novo. And as a result, if this court is to find that there is a right to a jury trial under Chapter 535, we believe that that would create a public policy problem in the state of Missouri, not only for our landlords, but for our courts.
But the appellants say that they've done some research, and out of 2,317 unlawful detainer cases in St. Louis City, St. Louis County, and Jackson County in 2016, only 21 requested a jury trial. Doesn't seem like that would be a clog, does it?
And Your Honor, I appreciate that. But in response to that, I know that I do a bunch of these cases a lot. The vast majority of what I do are rent and possession cases, because that's the vast majority of what's filed in this state.
And they're mostly pro se?
Correct. Unlike unlawful detainers, those are they both involve the remedy of possession, but they're different types of cases. In a rent and possession, typically it's a pro se tenant who can't pay the rent, as opposed to unlawful detainers are usually three specific classes, either your squatters, your foreclosure holdovers, or your holdover tenants. Unlike an unlawful detainer in a rent and possession, if you don't have the money to pay rent and can't pay rent, there is no incentive for you to try and avoid a jury trial. Moreover, in these types of cases, when they're heard, they're typically large dockets in front of Associate Circuit Court. And I'll tell you, based on experience, when one tenant hears that, hey, I owe rent, but I'm going to extend this out by asking for a jury trial, you can bet 12 others will follow shortly thereafter.
Opposing counsel suggests in their briefs that you can weed out those cases that aren't real by moving for summary judgment or other kinds of summary proceedings, that the number of actual jury trials that would go would be limited by the number that have actual questions.
Well, with summary judgment in particular, that's another statutory mechanism that would take, under Rule 7404, to be able to set and hear summary judgment, it would take at least 2, probably 3 months, in a case that was specifically designed by the legislature to be heard on the first available trial.
And you come to what, to me, is the key question, which is, you have great policy arguments why this change in getting rid of trial de novo could create problems, but shouldn't you be addressing those across the street as to why they got rid of the trial de novo as opposed to this court? Because if it is what we think would be good policy versus a constitutional right, the Constitution always wins. So don't you need to address that issue with us of why it's not a constitutional right? Because we could think it's a terrible idea, and that really wouldn't affect our decision if we thought you were constitutionally entitled to it.
Sure. And I agree that the public policy arguments are strong. But in this case, we also believe that case law and the development of the right to a jury trial constitutionally, as opposed to statutorily, is also on our side as well. We believe that that dates back to State Ex Rel Kansas City Auditorium v. Allen, all the way back to 1891. I think it's important to note, first of all, that Chapter 535 is a creature of statute. It was not analogous to any common law action that would have existed back in the day. Even the unlawful detainer statutes themselves are also creatures of statute. I was digging through back through old cases on Westlaw in preparation for this. The first statutory creation of unlawful detainer that I could find was back in 1825, which was before the court's analysis of 1820, the date that the court has to look at under Deal. Even those unlawful detainer statutes, it was explicitly created that those unlawful detainer cases had the right to a trial by jury that was created by statute in 1825. It was not a common law constitutional right, which would have extended back to 1820, which is where
it sounds a lot like damages for breach of contract. And I know you say it's not, but I'm not clear. If it's not, if it's just enforcing the contract, then every time somebody sues for a breach of contract, they're really just trying to enforce the contract. And we, in all our contract disputes would not be jury trials under your rationale.
Well, sure. I disagree that they are just sound in breach of contract. If that were the case, our landlords in this state would just bring breach of contract actions, as that common law remedy still exists.
For the damages part, for possession.
For the damages part, correct.
Right.
But for possession of the property, the legislature created this statute specifically with possession in mind, because there is a public policy interest in restoring landlords with property.
Absolutely. But can you address the point made by opposing counsel, an argument that in order to get possession, you have to prove rent is due, which means you have to prove the damage part so you can't separate them?
Well, there is a requirement that some rent is due. The court does not have to come down and say that all rent is due. If the landlord says $1,000 is due and the tenant agrees that $200 is due, that's sufficient for a finding of the court that the landlord is entitled to possession under the statute. Now, as to the condition precedent argument, I wrote that down a little bit. And I think it's a condition precedent that some rent is due under the statute, but the question here is, what is the remedy? Is the remedy that's being sought, is that a remedy in law or a remedy in equity? Here, the remedy that's being sought primarily is possession. And you know, our brief talked a lot about the ancillary issues. I think Chapter 535 is clear, whether it's through legislative intent or the plain language of the statute, that the chapter itself is primarily concerned with divesting possession from the tenant to the landlord or whomever the property owner may be, and that the payment of rent as subsequent damages is an ancillary issue to the issue of divesting possession back.
So you're talking about a landlord suing just for possession, using rent as just an element, rent owed as just an element, and suing legally for the rent at a later time. That's what you're talking about.
Well, I don't know about at a later time, but under the statute, they do have the explicit right, if the landlord wants to go after possession alone and not monetary damages. I think it might be a different question before the court if they sued for possession and then later, say 3 years down the road, sued for a breach of contract. That might be an improper splitting of the cause of action. But I do think the landlord, explicitly under the statute, has the right to make a showing to the court and just ask the court for possession of the property as opposed to any monetary damages.
I think the question kind of goes to, you're saying that monetary damages are just incidental, but and this court could agree with you. If the court did not agree with you, would you be, is it your argument you'd be entitled to a jury trial only on the damages if they weren't incidental, and well, not on the possession? Is that your backup argument?
I think under Leonardi, that's correct, Judge. I believe, and it's our position, that you don't even have to get there, because we believe that the only claim that this is analogous to would be something that sounds in a remedy in specific performance. Specific performance for the entire cause of action would not be entitled to a jury trial. If the court is convinced in the hypothetical that you threw out, we believe that although the case of Leonardi did change the law a little bit with respect to that, there is some language in Leonardi that indicates, and I've got the quote highlighted, in some situations, the practical and efficient trial of a case may require limited incidental claims at law to be tried to the court in connection with equitable matters. So we do believe, and I don't know if it's ever been fully parsed out through the court, but we do believe under the language that the court has come down with in Leonardi that there is this option, there is this backup for the court to try incidental claims at law.
And is there anything that gives us some gauge on what's incidental that could be, courts could use to apply this in practice?
Sure. I think the language of the statute itself indicates that that the rent part is incidental to the possession.
No matter how much it is.
I agree to a certain extent, I think. There may be scenarios which takes you out of jurisdictional limits, which may be an issue. But for the most part, I believe that the statute is very clear that the amount of rent itself is incidental, especially considering that the vast majority of these cases are the types of cases in which if you have a rent and possession case, you're trying to get your property back because that tenant has already proven that they can't pay rent. A lot of times in these cases, the individual is not collectible to begin with. So I think based on the language of the statute itself and the policy backing behind the reason the statute exists, I think all of that supports the conclusion that it's incidental.
Do we have any information in the record about why the legislature got rid of the de novo?
We do not, Judge. I'll be honest with you. I have not seen any of that information. I don't believe it's presented on the record.
Counsel, is it your position that Chapter 535 expressly precludes jury trials of these actions, or is it silent on that question?
We believe it's silent on that question, Your Honor.
And what's the default position in an Associate Circuit Court?
Well, in Associate Circuit Court, the default position would be, dating all the way back to State X Rel Kansas City Auditorium, would be that claims of equity, claims that wouldn't have been entitled to a jury trial back in 1820,
would not be entitled to a jury trial unless it is explicitly provided by statute, and in, like an unlawful detainer. In Chapter 534, unlawful detainer, a jury trial is explicitly provided by statute. In Chapter 535, though the legislature is silent, their silence on the issue indicates a preference that these not be tried by jury.
Well, in 517, there's a statute that says any case that's triable by jury, and then it sets out the waiver provision. And I believe that they timely asserted the demand for a jury trial, so under that statute, if it's triable, it doesn't say triable by jury under the Constitution, it just says triable by jury.
Right, and so triable by jury would refer to both either constitutional or by statute. Like a 534 has a right to a trial by jury that's provided by statute. It would be cases that had a right to trial by jury under the deal analysis. And our argument today is that under the deal analysis, these types of cases would never have had the right to trial by jury. The legislature understood what they were doing in Chapter 534 cases when they put in explicit language that 534 unlawful detainer cases did have a right to a trial by jury.
But isn't that because 534 started when it was originally enacted? It was those cases were heard in courts of equity, so they had to state that they had a right to a jury trial.
Correct. I would agree with that, yes.
And so that's the basis for that language, isn't it, in those statutes?
That's the original basis. Like I said, the farthest back statute I could find on unlawful detainer dated back to 1825. And you're correct that was based on the original rule that unless it was explicitly provided for by statute in justices of the peace cases, you didn't get one.
And the distinction wasn't what kind of action it was what court was hearing it.
At that time, yes, correct. Now, obviously,
today, if you filed an action for breach of contract and common law objection, mm-hmm. you would have no argument that those causes wouldn't be triable to a jury, right?
Common law breach of contract for damages, okay. As opposed to, say, specific performance?
Correct.
Yes. I mean, if your remedy for just a regular breach of contract seeking the common law remedy of just damages based on that breach, you would get
a separate claim for ejectment. Right?
Correct.
Because you're not asking for specific performance, you're trying to end the contract, right?
Well, the ending or termination of the contract would be pursuant to the contract. Most of these times,
I understand, but you're not asking for specific performance in the sense that you're saying you can't have injunctive relief, if they sued to enforce the lease so they could stay in, that would be specific performance. Or if you sued to force them to pay and perform on the lease and stay in possession, that would be specific performance. But suing to kick them out is suing for a breach of contract because they failed to do what they said under the contract.
I see that I've gone beyond my time, but yes. I'd be happy to answer that question if
yes,
I may.
Yes, please.
I believe it is specific performance because the remedy that's being sought under Chapter 535 is that we're asking the court to specifically compel performance of the contract, which is if there's a breach of the condition precedent to pay rent, there's a clause in dating all the way back to the 1800s in every residential lease that if you do not pay rent, it's a condition precedent and you must leave the property.
But then again, I say many contracts have provisions for penalties and so forth that occur when you don't comply with the terms, or for if you don't pay by a certain time then you owe extra money, or all sorts of different provisions. So those are all equitable claims not tried to the jury under your rationale.
Well, I'd have to know what the specific claims were.
But you see, in looking at this, we have to look, if we accepted your argument, what effect would that have on contract law in general? And I have a concern that I'm hoping you can address.
Sure. And I will say, I agree with the proposition that specific performance claims are a very narrow portion of our jurisprudence. So I don't know that there would be this slippery slope that opens up the door to all of these different types of claims are claims in equity. But the question under deal is not, is it specific performance? It's what's it analogous to? And we believe in this case it is analogous to something that sounds in specific performance. Chapter 535 is its own statutory.
Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Your Honors, to follow up on your specific question, Judge Draper, the case in question was LaSalle Choteau v. Griffin. It's in footnote 6 on page 36 of our substitute brief. Jury trials in Missouri are protected for a range of cases. Small claims cases under $25 can have a right to jury trial if they reach trial de novo. Municipal ordinance violations are entitled to trial by jury at trial de novo. And historically, that trial de novo has been the valve that keeps the lid on those cases from avoiding a verdict. If we need to go back to that for landlord-tenant cases, the legislature has that remedy to ensure that you have that right to trial by jury.
But you're not asking us to write into the statute a right to trial by novo. You're asking that a right to trial take place at the Associate Circuit Court level.
If the legislature determines, Your Honor, that that burden is such that it needs to go back to that, it has the ability to do that. And I don't believe that this court does have that ability. I don't think it can write that in to the statute as it's currently written. But the appropriate place to address those burdens would be at the legislature. And I don't know if this was an intended consequence of the removal of trial de novo, but I think that it is a consequence under the Constitution. Your Honor, Chief Justice, has your concurrence in Dodson v. Ferreira recognized that once a legislature gives parties the right to seek damages, it then cannot choose whether or not they get jury on that damages. It's a procedural issue in this case, that you have a claim for monetary damages, and it's a common law analog to a breach of contract. And opposing counsel mentioned this is an idea of specific performance. But specific performance is fundamentally not a claim for monetary damages.
What if the petition just sought possession?
If the petition
even
just,
though the statute allows for both, what if the petition itself just sought possession?
Your Honor, I think under the statute in 535, there can be no possession without award of money. I think the answer in that question would be Chapter 534, which does allow possession only, or potentially even a statutory or common law ejectment claim. Rent and possession is they go together. You owe the rent, so the landlord gets the possession.
Well, what if you admitted to some degree of damages or rent was owed?
Your Honor, I think in that case, the distinction comes with that right to cure within 535. Perhaps it could be a situation where if I admit that I owe $200 and I pay that $200, that would be enough to resolve that claim and keep me in possession. But as long as there's a dispute about how much money is owed, I don't have my right to cure under the statute because I would either have to consent to his amount or he would have to consent to my amount.
Prior to the amendments, was the right to jury trial after trial de novo express in Chapter 535?
No, Your Honor. There has never been an express way, one way or the other, at the circuit court level. There was, at one point, language that said there was no jury trial permitted in magistrate court.
Right.
But since Kansas City Auditorium, there's always been that acknowledgement that there is that potential of a right to jury at the circuit court level.
And was that ever litigated or disputed, that after the trial de novo in circuit court that you had a right to jury trial on these claims?
On the only time that particular claim came, in my knowledge, Your Honor, is that Southern District case in Burleson v. Conklin that held that jury trial was fundamentally available at the circuit court level, and that applied, obviously, the language from Rice that said that it's available whenever and by whatever means it reaches the circuit court. For these reasons, I believe that appropriate response in this case is to remand it back to the circuit court for trial by jury. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you for a well-argued case.
Okay.